on case 85111, Orbitz Worldwide versus the state. Counsel, will you state your appearances, please?
Yes, Todd Bice on behalf of the petitioners. With me is Mr. Tasca.
Good morning, or good afternoon. All right, thank you, sir. All right, thank you. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Chief Justice.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Chief Justice, members of the court, Todd Bice on behalf of petitioners. This petition, writ petition, presents a question of law for the court, and that is whether the legislature's decision to use the word maintain instead of the word bring in section 57.080 of the Nevada False Claims Act must be given effect. And under well-settled principles of statutory interpretation that this court has applied over the years, the word maintain cannot be interpreted to be bring or anything synonymous with it. There's 3 points I'd like to make on that. The first is that the legislature borrowed this language or borrowed the statute from the federal government.
Mr. Bice, I don't mean to interrupt you. Is it your intention to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Oh, I apologize. Yes, I told the clerk 4 minutes.
So first,
Nevada borrowed this statute from the federal government and made changes to it. Second, the statute uses the word bring, brought, or commence in multiple other provisions of the statutory scheme. And then lastly, as this court has said multiple times, different words used in the same statute must have different meanings. And this really brings us back to the one time in which this court has already addressed this statute, which is the IGT versus the Second Judicial District Court, where this court recognized that changes that the legislature made to the statute when it adopted the language from Congress must be given effect. And that's somewhat ironic here, because if it weren't for those legislative changes that the legislature made, we wouldn't be here at all, because under the federal statute, tax cases were exempt from False Claims Act. So it's a little ironic that we're here arguing about should the legislative changes be given effect, because if they weren't given effect, there would be no False Claims Act claim to begin with respect to these tax matters. So with all due respect to my opponent's position, they seem to be arguing you should give some effect to what the changes the legislature made to the federal statute, just not all of them. And that, we submit, the court should not and cannot do. The district court, in its decision, sort of sua sponte, this issue really was not briefed originally. The district court took the position that the word already, which is a remnant from the federal statute, was somehow the deciding language. It was not briefed in the original rounds of motions. We would acknowledge that. It was, however, briefed on the reconsideration. By that time, Judge Denton was back on the case, and he had denied that motion. So the district court seized upon that word already, but did not address, in the first instance, the significant change that the legislature had made, because the federal statute precluded an action from a private party from bringing an action, where the Nevada legislature had changed that language to say that a private party is not allowed to maintain an action. So the district court effectively imposed a sequence, merely essentially providing that the government action bar, as it is commonly referred to, only applies if the government has beaten the private party to the courthouse. The private party beats the government to the courthouse, the government action bar does not apply according to the district court. And again, we maintain that as just simply wrong, because it simply ignores the legislative change that was made. That would be true.
Do you agree? You were just about to say that. Under the federal act, you would agree that is?
Under the federal action, that is the structure of the federal action. But just like I said, Justice Kadish, under the federal statute, there is no ability to bring a False Claims Act claim for a tax liability. Yeah. So there are material changes that the legislature made to the federal statute, even though they borrowed from it. And those changes, we submit, have to be given effect. And if they're not going to be given effect, then we wouldn't be here at all.
Is there anything Dare I ask, is there anything helpful in the legislative history as to why that word bring or brought was changed to maintain?
So I've looked into that, and not that I could determine. The one thing I would tell the court in terms of legislative sort of background is that the statute was originally implemented in 1999. There have been several amendments to it over the course of the years. And interestingly, one of the last amendments was in 2013. And interestingly, in 2013, there was two uses of the word maintained at that point in time. In section 357.080, in subsection 1, the legislature changed the word maintain to bring. In subsection 1. And that was in 2013. Now, notably, they amended every provision of that section of the statute, being 357.080, except for sub 3, which is the government action bar. And they left the word maintain intact, did not change it to bring. So to the extent that there is any legislative history, we would submit that, confirms the fact that the legislature did not consider those words to be synonymous with each other or treat them the same way, because otherwise they were amending that very subsection or that very section of the statute and did not make that change.
Then how do you square that with the word already, with the state or political division is already a party?
So
does that mean that they're existing?
Yeah, so Justice Lee, that is a language that carried over from the federal statute. And our response to that is fairly straightforward. The word already is not the material term. It's not the trigger, because the legislature didn't touch that word. But the legislature did touch, because the federal statute said bring. But they changed that to the word maintain. Right? They left the word already in there. Now, interestingly, the word already, even under the federal statute, the federal courts had recognized that word, they didn't call it redundant, but they said it was really an emphasis point. It wasn't a material requirement, even under the federal statute, because the federal statute used the word bring. And for that point, I would cite the Biotronics case from the Ninth Circuit, which we cited in the briefs, where the court addresses this word already and points, it addresses the word, quote, already, quote, and points out that it was not this material change in the statutory structure. So, again, with all due deference to the district court's ruling on this, that word, which was never touched by the legislature, can't really be the material provision, the material trigger, because the trigger for when the government action bar applies is the opening statement in 080 sub 3, which says that no action may be maintained. A private party may not maintain an action if the other prerequisites are satisfied. And here, there's no dispute that the other prerequisites are satisfied. The district court acknowledged that. So the only question for this court is frankly quite simple. Does the word maintain, can it be changed back to bring? And we submit that that's not the court's role. The court can't substitute that word back in, which is essentially what the respondents here are claiming. The relators are essentially, for the relators to prevail, the court would have to change the word maintain back to bring after the legislature had already changed it from bring to maintain.
If we assume your position and there's no sequencing requirement under this, and we have an action by the real parties in interest on behalf of the state, and we have an action by Clark County.
Yes.
What, regardless of sequencing, what's the wisdom of allowing a political subdivision to essentially, having filed a case unilaterally, lead to the dismissal of the other cases?
So just turn it. There's a couple of issues I would have with sort of predicate, but let me answer your question first, and then I'll come back to what I'd like to point out about that. The statute doesn't concern itself with who brings the action, because it says the state or political subdivision. What the statute
says, the state or political subdivision refer back to the one at issue in the case?
Yes, but in this particular case, Justice Kadish, what the statute's real trigger is it the allegations or transactions that are the subject of the case that has been brought by the government? And in this case, they are. And the district court said that they are. In fact, the district court said they are the same allegations and transactions. And that is true. And you know how we know that's true? Because that's how the statute is set up. The statute being the tax. In this case, the tax is imposed under NRS 244 as the lodging tax. The state doesn't impose that tax. The state compels the local government to impose the tax, and then the local government adopts an ordinance that imposes the tax, administers the tax, does the audits, collects the tax, and then the legislature has directed that once the local government collects the tax, a certain amount of the proceeds are then directed to various locations, some of which is back to the state. And that's actually part of the point Judge Mahan made in his recent ruling, which we have submitted a supplemental authority to the court. What his ruling was is the enabling legislation is what controls here. And the enabling legislation that the state imposed and directed the local governments to implement this tax sets forth what the terms of the tax are.
So is it your position or your understanding, I guess it's not so much a position, but that the county, all of the lodging tax gets paid to the county, whichever county that is.
Correct.
And then the county pays the part of it that is owed to the state to the state.
Correct. If the county doesn't collect it, there's no tax that goes to the state. The state receives a portion per the state legislation from the county back to the state.
So was the county's case seeking what included the state's portion of the tax?
Absolutely it was. And it had to be because that's what the legislature has directed. And that's what Judge Mahan's order specifies. I'll just use a limited amount of time. Yeah. The point of the tax is that it's a unitary tax that the state compels the locals to impose. The state doesn't impose the tax itself directly, and it doesn't collect the tax. So by definition, what Clark County was seeking was 100% of the tax. And it is the same allegations and the same transactions in both actions. I thank the court. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bass. Mr. Gentile.
May it please the court. I want to start off with correcting something. It appears on page one of the petition. It appears on page three of the reply, and now it was said to you live by Mr. Weiss. The statute, subpart B of 357.080.3, does not say the state or a political subdivision. And that is really important. It says the state or political subdivision is already a party. Now, why is it important? It's important because if you're going to say a political subdivision, it could be any political subdivision. Whereas this statute is clearly designed to prevent parasitic lawsuits. The one case that we cited in our answer that has not been addressed in the reply at all, nor has its progeny, is the Prower case from the First Circuit. And I think that the Prower case from the First Circuit will be helpful to you in deciding what you're going to do with this case. In Prower, and it was a case of first impression in 1994, and guess what? There hasn't been anything to change Prower since 1994. And what Prower said was, although you have all of this case law with regard to the public disclosure bar, there are two bars in the federal statute and in ours. The importance of Prower is that it recognized and it dealt with and it addressed that the purpose for both of those subparts was to prevent parasitic lawsuits. Now, you can't have a parasite without a host. It's rare that the parasite comes first, okay? And in this instance, if Prior is right, and no case has ever said it was wrong, and I don't think you will either, if Prior is right, then there has to be, in order for it to be parasitic at all, the parasite has to live off of, gain something from, and give nothing back to the host.
Well, Mr. Gentile, that's fine, and I get the concept of the parasitic lawsuit, but what do we make of the actual Nevada statute before us that changed Brought to Maintain?
I cannot resist what I'm about to say.
Okay.
When I use the word, Humpty Dumpty said, in rather a scornful tone, it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less. The question is, said Alice, whether you can make words mean so many different things. The question is, says Humpty Dumpty, which is to be master? That's all. And it fits here. I have a little chart over here. And since we didn't set up the easel, I'm going to let Mr. Cristalli hold it.
He's earning his keep
today. This piece is about three words. The first word is government, and the way the petitioner uses government, it doesn't fit in the concept of a state government. All right, in the federal statute, the government's the government. There are no political subdivisions. Our Constitution makes Nevada, the state of Nevada, the sovereign. Justice Herndon, I think your question that you put kind of goes right to this issue. When have we seen the legislature intend to give the subdivision the ability to trump the sovereign? It doesn't happen. And so you have to read this in the context of what does already mean? Because it gives a definition to already, which is not an ambiguous term. Already means that something has happened prior. All right, real
prior
simple.
To what?
That's the, you know what? What triggers the government? That is exactly the point. What triggers the government action bar? Which, by the way, is a term that we have never used in Nevada. Our statute doesn't use it. But for purposes of today, let's use it. The question is it triggered by the filing of the original QI-TAM action, or is it triggered by the subsequent filing? And if it's triggered by the original QI-TAM action, already is easy. There's already a case in being in which the government is party. All right? If it's triggered by the time that the subsequent motion is filed, all of these constitutional issues, sovereignty, mitigate against it. So it has to be triggered by when was the, in what sequence was the QI-TAM action filed as compared to the case in which a county is attempting to have the state's QI-TAM action dismissed later, which brings up their counter-argument to that. They say, well, the state can go forward anyhow, or a county could go forward anyhow. They could do it by way of a direct action. Yes, what was the purpose of QI-TAM actions? To allow private individuals to use their resources, because the resources, you know, this is a tax case, now that I think about it. And what do we use taxes for? We use taxes to pay for government, for the most part, and services. All right? And anybody who's been a prosecutor, anybody who's worked for government, anybody who's sat on a court recognizes that that resources are scarce. And so if the purpose of putting a QI-TAM provision in this statute, it didn't have to have one. It could just say that, you know, if there's a false claim and you can prove it, county, or you could prove it, state, bring it. And it permits them to bring it.
Permits the state.
Pardon me? It
permits the state.
Sure it does.
Does it permit the county to bring one?
Yeah, but they have to get a direct action, yes. It permits the county to bring a direct action. It does not permit the county, you asked about legislative history. In the original bill, I've read more of it than I care to, but in the original bill, there was a provision in there to let the screening process for QI-TAMs break down to the AG for state and the district attorneys for local governments. And then Senator Titus and representatives from Washoe County and Clark County and Deputy Attorney General Terry basically said, let the AG do it. We do not want to have that happen. And so with the way the statute was then written, The Attorney General, if you file a TTAM action, you must, first of all, do it under seal. And then you have to wait for the AG to consider it, make determinations as to whether it might get in the way of some state policy that they don't want to have upset, make other determinations. If you're filing it on behalf of a political subdivision, one of the things that the Attorney General is going to do is he's going to talk to the people from that political subdivision. But it is the Attorney General, and IGT really makes this clear. The KTAM action, whether it's filed on behalf of the state, whether it's filed on behalf of a political subdivision, must go through the Attorney General. The Attorney General is the single most powerful government representative in the analysis of KTAM actions.
Counsel, what about Mr. Bice's representation that the state, that the Clark County brought this action to include those amounts that are also, that the state are owed as well? So is it, are they getting dealt, is this a redundant lawsuit?
If it were identical, if the lawsuits were identical, and if the only county that the state was suing on behalf of is what they lost out of Clark County, you could make an argument for that, but that is not the case here. There are at least five other counties, Washoe being one of them, Lyon being one of them, and I don't remember the other three. But the bottom line is that there are at least four or five other counties. The proof of the absence of payment of taxes of which would go to the calculus in the damages in the KTAM action brought on behalf of the state. That is not, Clark County can't do it. There's not a lot of case law, but it is uniform that one county can't bind another.
But
one county can't
sue. Is the amount that's being sought on behalf of the entire state or just these individual counties?
It's on behalf of the, it's on behalf of the state because the state's the party, which is one of the reasons this government action bar doesn't work here.
But does Clark County, does the Clark County action also seek to recover the same thing that your clients are seeking to recover, the same?
No, if there can't be a double recovery, we all know that.
Right.
Clark County can collect whatever it was that Clark County had coming and the state's portion.
Okay.
But that does not and should not, and it makes no sense to let it foreclose other counties that don't have the resources to bring their own direct action from taking advantage of the KTAM relator's action.
But as to the Clark County claim, those are coextensive.
No, they're coextensive with the portion of the state case that would be Clark County damages.
Right, so there isn't any sub-piece that Clark County suing for Clark County minus the part that Clark County would otherwise remit to the state.
I would imagine that the admissibility of the evidence would be the same in both, but you'd have to set off for the potential of a double recovery.
Thanks.
So let me ask this. So we know from the supplement, and obviously you were aware because you're counsel there too, that in the county case, Judge Mahan has apparently dismissed on the merits. What effect, if any, does that have on this case?
Nothing. At this stage, zero.
Okay.
It's a federal district court case that is not final. We are preparing a motion for reconsideration. There should have been, this court should have had under NRAP 5 that case set here so that you could make the determination as to what a state statute.
Putting that aside for a moment.
Okay.
This case, your clients, private plaintiffs, are suing on behalf of the state, right? In the case you're here on today.
Yes, the case I'm here on today.
Okay. And in the case that was before Judge Mahan and may still be before Judge Mahan, not for me to say, the Clark County is the plaintiff, the only plaintiff
That
case.
That's correct.
So would a final result in that case affect the outcome? Would it be binding in this case?
I think it would only, you know, we're looking into that right now, but my current belief is that it may have some collateral estoppel effect with regard to Clark County, but it isn't going to have any effect with regard to anybody else. I mean, you know, some judge will look at it and say, well, you know, maybe I agree with them or maybe I don't.
Right.
But it's not binding. That's
right.
Sure.
No, that's a different question.
Yeah. Okay. Are you done with me? Thank you.
Okay. Colleagues, anyone have any further questions for Mr. Gentile before he runs off? No. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Justices. Let me just briefly respond to Mr. Gentile and this distinction he's trying to draw between the state and a political or the political subdivision. This action is brought in the name of this relator action, this QI-TAM claim is brought only in the name of the state. It's not brought on behalf of other political subdivisions, right, including Washoe County, Lyon County. It's brought on behalf of the state, mm-hmm, right? The state's portion of the tax has been their theory. That is part of Clark County's case that Clark County brought, because that's how the tax is set up. The state doesn't impose the tax. State compels the locals to impose it. The locals impose it. They audit. They collect. All the money goes to the local jurisdiction, and then they remit it as directed by the legislature. Part of that money going to the state. So this is why the district court said in its order, the allegations or transactions at issue in this QI-TAM case are the same as the allegations or transactions in the Clark County
action.
But is
the state or political subdivision the same?
I'm sorry?
But is the state or political subdivision the same?
The political subdivision, is the state court political subdivision? Well, yes, Justice Kadish, because in the case of the state, the QI-TAM action, they brought it in the name of the state for the portion of the tax, right, that the locals have imposed. So with all due respect, I don't think you can get around the government action bar by saying, well, I'm going to bring this in the name of the school district because the school district is part of the tax, but I can then avoid the government action bar because Clark County is the party who otherwise imposes the tax and collects it.
But
right?
the statute itself that we're dealing with talks about that if the action is based upon allegations or transactions that are the subject of a civil action to which the state or political subdivision is already a party.
Correct.
Doesn't the state or political subdivision refer back to the state or political subdivision on behalf of which the QI-TAM case is brought?
The answer to that is, well, it doesn't say one way or the other, but it says the state or political subdivision. And I understand exactly what you're saying. What I'm saying here, Justice Kadish, is you can't circumvent the government action bar by bringing an action in the name of the state for a portion of the local government's tax. And that's what they're doing. They've admitted that. Their theory here is the local governments impose this tax. That's the whole point of Judge Mahan's ruling. So with all due respect, you can't then say, well, I'm suing on behalf of the state only for its small sliver, and you're going to have a duplicative lawsuit, which is what the government action bar is about precluding, by the way, is precluding duplication and leaving it to the government. That's actually what this court said in IGT, if the court will remember, is particularly on tax matters, that's a matter best left to the government, who has imposed the tax, who decides how to interpret the tax, who decides how to implement the tax, and who decides how to interpret the tax. And if they want to proceed, private relators should not be allowed to proceed in competition with them. That's what the government action bar is about.
So a year, 2 years into a case, a government entity brings a separate case and they get cut off. Sorry, Chief, can he answer?
Yes, of course. So the answer to your question is yes. The answer is yes to that. But I also think, and this happens all the time, when there's lots of sort of what I would call remote hypotheticals one can think of with respect to statutes, and could those remote hypotheticals create difficulty? And that's especially true when the government borrows a statute from another jurisdiction and doesn't adopt all of its terms, right? And then changes some of its terms. As I said, Justice Kadish, we wouldn't be here if it weren't for the legislative changes that Nevada implemented, because this case would be barred by the tax exemption in the federal statute. So here, right, I mean, there's some irony here that the relators are coming and saying, well, we want to take advantage of those legislative changes, but please don't enforce the other legislative changes against us. So coming back to your question, the reason I think that that hypothetical is remote, but I acknowledge that that hypothetical could exist. The reason it's remote is there's no reason for the government to try and cut off a private relator if, in fact, their case is moving forward. Because theoretically, if it's a meritorious case, the government is going to be the beneficiary of that case. They're not going to want to jump in 2, 3, or however many years in a hypothetical, we could say, and try and cut them off. There's no incentive for the government to do that. But what Nevada has done here is it has decided that on tax matters like this, the government, if the government wants to proceed, the private relators have to step aside. And this isn't the only provision where that happened. Nevada also did not adopt what is known as the alternative remedies bar. The alternative remedies provision in the federal statute. In the federal statute, if there's a private cause of action already brought in a QTAM claim, there's nothing under federal law the government is allowed to bring what is known as alternative remedies. They could, if there's an administrative proceeding, well, guess what happens? The federal government adopted a provision that said the private relators do not get cut off if the government does that. Nevada didn't adopt that provision. Because why? Because private relators do get cut off if the government brings its own action. And I know I have exceeded my time, and I thank the justices. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. All right, this matter will stand submitted. Court's going to stand in a brief recess.